Okay, well, I've got a long ways to go, and I want to try, if possible at all, to address some of the things that Max said, because he said an awful lot of things that I really, really want to address. But he made some comments concerning 1 Corinthians chapter 15. He said, you can read from verse 1 all the way through verse 15, you'll never see AD 70. He said, you'll have to have help. Well, I would suggest to you, we've had plenty of help not seeing it. Historically, in the amillennial position of the churches of Christ, especially, to which Mac and I have both belonged. But 1 Corinthians 15 is unquestionably the foundational text for any discussion of the resurrection. If, therefore, I can demonstrate that 1 Corinthians 15 was, in fact, to be fulfilled at the end of the Old Covenant age in AD 70, then no matter what Mac might say about the nature of the resurrection, and I want you to notice, both of our propositions deal with when. There's not one word in either proposition about nature. It is about when the resurrection would occur. Then my proposition will have been proven and his paradigm is falsified. So the question is, can it be proven that 1 Corinthians 15 speaks of the end of the Old Covenant age that occurred in AD 70? And I affirm unequivocally and irrefutably that it can be. Now again, let me make a point that I made in the first presentation. And Mac, while he dodged all around it, tried desperately not to respond to it. And that is this critical fact. It is 1 Corinthians 15 is about the fulfillment of God's old covenant promises made to old covenant Israel. It is the salvation hope of Israel. Now, again, let me reiterate this point, folks, because it's so absolutely critical. He believes that the old covenant and Israel as a covenant people legally died at the cross. Now, Mac brought up Romans chapter 8, and he says, well, you see, Preston believes that we're living in the time of fulfillment of the old covenant. Well, no, I don't believe any such thing. That's a total misrepresentation of what I believe. The Romans chapter 8 is a prediction of the resurrection, just like 1 Corinthians 15 is a resurrection. They had the charismata of the Holy Spirit that was bringing in the world of the Spirit, the everlasting world of righteousness. It was operative then. It has been fulfilled now. I no longer have the charismata today, but I walk in the Spirit as a result of the fulfillment of the charismata during the last days of Israel. So, my opponent assumes, without any proof whatsoever, that 1 Corinthians 15 is about the end of the Christian age. The fulfillment of God's promises to the church, divorced from Israel. Now I'm going to make this point over and over. You will notice he did not touch that argument top, side, or bottom. Paul said, I preach nothing but the hope of Israel. And Mac tried to equivocate even on that. Well, Paul said, I preach nothing but what Moses and the prophets said would occur. Now watch this. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, Paul directly cites Isaiah 25 and Hosea 13 and draws on Daniel 9 and Daniel chapter 12 for his resurrection doctrine. Any view, and that includes my brothers, any view of 1 Corinthians 15 that does not take Israel and her promises into the interpretation of 1 Corinthians 15 cannot be the proper view of resurrection or 1 Corinthians 15. Now watch this again. Paul's doctrine of resurrection is from Hosea chapter 13 and Isaiah chapter 25. Now, Mac correctly believes, and he said in the Shenandoah lectureship of 1991, that any interpretation of a New Testament text that is in violation of an Old Testament source text, in other words, the passage that the New Testament text came from, is a wrong interpretation. It's wrong hermeneutic. I agree with that 100%. But I want you to watch this, ladies and gentlemen. The death that is the focus of resurrection in Hosea and in Isaiah is sin death. Now, what do I mean by that? I mean it's the death of the garden. And God told Adam and Eve, in the day that you eat, you will surely die. Now watch this. God didn't say you'll begin to die. God didn't say you'll become mortal. God said, in the day you eat, you will surely die. In one of my questions to Mac, in our written correspondence, I asked Mac, did Adam and Eve die the very day they ate the forbidden fruit, just as God threatened them. And he said, yes, they did. Well, ask yourself this question, ladies and gentlemen. Did Adam and Eve die physically that day? You know they didn't. Mac's own interpretation, or Mac's own definition of death, is taken from James chapter 2, verse 26, as the body without the spirit is dead. Okay, did the spirit leave Adam and Eve that day? Now, he believes that they died spiritually because they were separated from God that day. But they didn't die that day physically, therefore God lied to them. He introduces two deaths into the garden. There's only one death in the garden. They experienced that one death that day by Mac's own admission. Then he introduces another death into the garden that God never threatened them with. Now watch. The death that is the focus of Hosea and Isaiah is sin death, the very death of the garden. It is not physical death. I challenge Mac. Here's my challenge to it. Go to Isaiah 25, go to Hosea 13, and find the promise of a resurrection of a biologically dead human corpse. Find it. I know what death is mentioned in Hosea chapter 13. When Israel obeyed the Lord, he exalted himself, but when Israel sinned with Baal, he died. Yet he sinned more and more. There's dead men walking, folks. Dead men walking, okay? Now, since the death that is the focus of resurrection in Isaiah 25 and Hosea chapter 13 is sin death and not physical death, then since Paul's doctrine of resurrection comes from Isaiah 25 and Hosea 13, then the doctrine of resurrection in 1 Corinthians 15 is not physical death. Mac has invented that doctrine. Now, by the way, he brought up his chart, negative argument number one, 8A, and you'll notice he didn't call for one single one of my charts to even examine it. It's his responsibility to examine my arguments. Not one of them did he call for a chart. I'm calling for one of his charts. I got it in my hand right here. And he says, if the New Testament concept of the bodily resurrection is as universal in its description as is the universality of as the concept of physical death, then any doctrine that one defines, redefines bodily resurrection or that limits the event of bodily resurrection to a one-time historical occurrence involving only a few people less than all is a false doctrine. Here's the problem, ladies and gentlemen. He's guilty. Petitio Principi. He assumes that physical death is the death of the garden without proving it. What was his evidence? His evidence, his so-called proof, was what's known as an ad hominem argument. Don't we all experience physical death? Well, there it is, you see, ladies and gentlemen. So that proves the death of the garden is the death of 1 Corinthians 15. Proves no such thing. Has nothing to do whatsoever with it. So my question is, give us your hermeneutic. Give us your contextual proof. We don't need assertions. We don't need more ad hominem. We don't need more petitio principi. We need contextual exegetical demonstration that the death of Isaiah 25 and Hosea 13, the source of Paul's doctrine of resurrection, was a resuscitation from biological death, and you can't find it in either one of those texts. Therefore, 1 Corinthians 15 is not resuscitation from biological physical death. Now watch this, ladies and gentlemen. 1 Corinthians 15 is drawn from four key Old Testament texts. Now there are others at stake, but these are the key ones. Isaiah chapters 24 to 29, Hosea chapter 13, obviously, Daniel 9 and Daniel chapter 12. I ask this question again. How could Paul be anticipating the fulfillment of a dead law containing dead promises made to a legally dead people? Now, Mac tried to equivocate. He avoided it at all costs, but he did not answer the question. Are the promises, I want Mac to tell you up here right now, are the Old Testament promises that God made to Old Testament Israel still valid, still unfulfilled today? And if you'll answer that question, I've got something to say about it. So the question is again, how could Paul be anticipating the fulfillment of a dead law? He says the law, the Old Testament law, legally died at the cross. Let me reiterate, ladies and gentlemen, we are walking on the other side of fulfillment. We are walking in the blessings of fulfillment. We are not today fulfilling the old covenant. And I want to tell you something. If Mac were debating a Seventh-day Adventist, he would affirm that statement 100%. So any view of 1 Corinthians 15 that does not take these passages, Isaiah, Hosea, Daniel 9, Daniel 12, into consideration, and the issues raised by these passages, cannot be the proper view of resurrection in 1 Corinthians 15. So here is again is the argument. All promises to Old Covenant Israel were fulfilled no later than AD 70. I want Mac to get up here and I want him to tell us, are any of God's Old Covenant promises to Old Covenant Israel unfulfilled today? Yes or no? But the resurrection of 1 Corinthians 15 was an Old Testament promise made to Old Testament Israel, Isaiah, Hosea, Daniel. Therefore, the resurrection was fulfilled by AD 70. Now, I want you to watch this. Once again, I'm going to quote from him. In the Shenandoah Lectureship of 1991, he said, "The law and the prophets must be considered as a single unit." He said it no less than three times in that lecture. Three times. The law and the prophets must be considered as a single unit. Now, folks, I agree with that 100%. And the churches of Christ have argued that. And I know many of you are not from the churches of Christ, but you have to understand the power of this argument and what his background and mine is. The churches of Christ have argued forever that the law and the prophets is a singular one unit. All right? But watch this. Resurrection was part of the law. Isaiah predicted the resurrection. But in 1 Corinthians 14, verse 20 and following, Paul called Isaiah the law. All right? Now watch. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, none of the law could pass until it was all fulfilled. Now, Mac tried to make a big deal about my statement about all things being fulfilled at the fall of Jerusalem in AD 70, and he says, "You just watch, Preston will have to agree with me that there are times when all doesn't mean all." Well, I know that. I agree with that. Here's the problem. Let him find the qualifier in Matthew chapter 5. Let him find the qualifier in Luke chapter 21, verse 22. It's one thing to get up here and to say, well, Preston admits that there are some verses where all doesn't mean all. Well, that's okay. I agree with that. It's his burden of proof to demonstrate from the text of Matthew chapter 5 and Luke chapter 21 that all doesn't mean all. For him to prove that what Jesus really meant was all of the law can pass when some of it is fulfilled. I want the proof, and you need the proof as well. Well, let's go on. Since Jesus said none of the law could pass until it was all fulfilled, and since resurrection was part of the law, therefore none of the Old Testament, none of the law, and that includes the animal sacrifices, could pass until the resurrection, that is, the law, was fulfilled. If my friend's view is correct, Torah is still valid. Now I want him to answer the question. Is the Old Testament, is the old law still valid, binding, and effective today? Yes or no? Well, let's go on. The resurrection and the parousia of Christ of 1 Corinthians 15 would be in fulfillment of Isaiah chapter 25, verses 6 to 10. I know that because that's what Paul says. The resurrection of Isaiah 25, 6 to 10 is the time of the salvation of Israel. Now I want you to notice something. I alluded to, cited, quoted Romans chapter 11, 25 to 27, which says emphatically that Israel would be saved at the coming of the Lord to take away her sin, and he absolutely skirted around that 100% and said, well, if Israel gets any kind of salvation, she got it at the cross, she gets it through faith. Well, let me tell you something. Did he touch the argument that the coming of the Lord of Romans chapter 11 would be the coming of the Lord in judgment of Israel for shedding innocent blood? He didn't breathe on the argument. Didn't touch it. Didn't even mention it. But if Paul says the coming of the Lord to take away Israel's sin would be in fulfillment of Isaiah 27 and Isaiah 59, any view, and that includes my friend, that denies that the coming of the Lord and the salvation of Israel would be at any other time is a false view. I want him to tell us very specifically, very plainly, unequivocally what is the coming of the Lord of Romans 11, 26 and 27 that would be in fulfillment of Isaiah 27 and 59. I want him to tell you and I want him to tell me. All right, now watch. The salvation of Israel is at the parousia of Christ in fulfillment of Isaiah chapter 59. But Isaiah 59 foretold the coming of Christ in judgment of Israel for shedding innocent blood. Isaiah 59 verses 3 to 7 and verse 12. Christ came in judgment of Israel for shedding innocent blood in AD 70. And you know what he said to that? I have to admit this kind of humorous, and I'm not poking fun at all. But I found this rather humorous. He said, well, in Matthew chapter 23, you better believe Jesus did them some real dirt at that time. Well, folks, what, you know, we're not talking about just whether or not Jesus did them some dirt. We're talking about the fulfillment of Isaiah 59. And in talking about the fulfillment of Isaiah 59, it's the fulfillment of Romans chapter 11, 25 to 27, the coming of Christ to take away Israel's sin, the coming out of Zion to take away their sin, and not only for judgment, ladies and gentlemen. And see, he tried to dichotomize between the judgment of Israel and the salvation of Israel. What he fails to understand that Israel's salvation would come through judgment. Isaiah chapter 4, verse 4, I don't have time to go into detail, but Isaiah chapter 27, verse 9 and 10. Here is how Israel's sin would be taken away when God made the altar like chalk stone. Israel's salvation, the taking of Israel's away of Israel's sin, would be the application of the law of blood guilt and blood judgment of Numbers chapter 35. And again, I don't have time to go into that. But it's not just simply a question of Jesus doing some dirt to Israel in Matthew chapter 23 and AD 70. The issue again is, listen to this, the issue is the fulfillment of Isaiah 59, which is the coming of the Lord of Romans chapter 11 to take away their sin. And Daniel chapter 9 says the taking away of Israel's sin is defined by, limited to, AD 70. No later than that. Now remember, he tries to say if Israel had any sin removed at all, it was at the cross. No, Romans chapter 11, the coming of the Lord in judgment of Israel to take away their sin. He needs to deal with that instead of obfuscating and trying to avoid the issue. I don't blame him for trying to avoid it. I tried to avoid it for years. I finally had to admit the power of Romans chapter 11. And he, by the way, he made allusion. He said, well, you know, Daniel chapter 9 is just obscure. You know why it's obscure, ladies and gentlemen? It's because his theology doesn't have an answer for it. It's not obscure when you see that the taking away of sin and the making of atonement and the bringing in of everlasting righteousness is eschatological to be fulfilled in AD 70. Once you get rid of the clutter and the petitio principi and the presuppositions and let Daniel chapter 9 tell us when all of Israel's promises and prophecies would be fulfilled, and it involved the resurrection and it would be fulfilled no later than AD 70, all of a sudden the clouds disappear. Now our presuppositions suffer. I'll guarantee you what, I didn't come to where I am lightly. And he said, well, I suspect Don believed this or that at one time. I did. I'm a fifth generation member of the Churches of Christ. I didn't come to where I am lightly, but allowed the Bible to be my testimony. And I let it change my mind and change my heart, and that's why I'm a preterist today. Let's go on at 1 Corinthians 15. The resurrection of 1 Corinthians 15 is Christ's parousia at the time of the putting away of sin in fulfillment of Isaiah 25, 6 to 10. Folks, that's absolutely irrefutable. Now, I put up two or three charts a while ago and pointed out that every premise in the syllogism was irrefutable. He didn't say one single word about those arguments. Okay, now watch this. Isaiah 25, 6 to 10 is the time of the salvation of Israel at the resurrection. How do I know that? Because it predicts the resurrection, verse 8, and it says it would be the time of Israel's salvation, verse 10. So what Paul is predicting in 1 Corinthians 15 is exactly what is predicted in Isaiah chapter 25. It is the hope of Israel. Let me reiterate, it's the hope of Israel. It's not the hope of the church divorced from Israel. Remember, he believes that Israel legally died at the cross. Her promises legally died at the cross. But again, Israel would be saved at Christ's parousia for the taking away of her sin. Now watch this, to fulfill his covenant promises to her. Wait a minute. If the old covenant legally died at the cross, how could any covenant promise to an old covenant people still be valid? Now, folks, just ask yourself that question. Just think about it for a minute. If a law is dead, it's gone, it's abolished, it's abrogated. Mac, do you want to stand up here and tell us some of those promises and provisions of that promise really are, honestly, still in effect, binding? Do you honestly want to tell this audience this? And I'm being kind here. I'm not a bit angry at him. You know, we're just pressing our points here. He's going to do the same. I never want to be accused, you know, of being ungentlemanly. But this is an important issue. If a law is dead, its promises and its provisions are dead. You know it, I know it, and Mac knows it. But the resurrection, the coming of the Lord to take away Israel's sin in fulfillment of Isaiah 59 was a covenant promise to old covenant Israel. Therefore, since the resurrection of 1 Corinthians 15 was an old covenant promise made to old covenant Israel, then the resurrection of 1 Corinthians 15 would be no later than AD 70. Now I put this chart up there, and I showed that the constituent elements are exactly precisely the same. And he said, well, you know, I've got some problem with that, but he didn't tell us what the problems were. Well, here are the constituent elements again. The putting away of Israel's sin was promised in Daniel chapter 9. The making of the atonement, the bringing in of the everlasting world of righteousness in fulfillment of Israel's salvation promises. And again, Mac agrees, no later than AD 70. Every single constituent element to be found there is found in Hebrews chapter 9, 24, 10 and following. And by the way, he says that atonement was completed when Christ ascended. No, it wasn't. They were still waiting for the second coming of Christ. Why? For the law having, present tense, a shadow of good things about to come. Jesus had to come to fulfill the typological high priest atonement cultic actions, and he did not completely fulfill those high priest cultic actions when he entered into the most holy place. The writer of Hebrews says he must come again the second time because the law is a shadow of good things about to come. Daniel chapter 9 would be fulfilled at the second coming of Christ to complete the atonement. But the completion of the atonement is the time of the resurrection of 1 Corinthians 15. Well, let's go on and make the argument. Again, this argument was 100% ignored. Daniel 9 predicted Israel's salvation, that is, the putting away of Israel's sin, the making of the atonement, the world of everlasting righteousness at the fulfillment of God's promises to her. He cannot refute it. Because it's exactly and precisely what Daniel chapter 9, verse 24 and following says. Hebrews chapter 9, 24 to 28, being the same as 1 Corinthians 15, that is the second coming, resurrection, predicted the time of Israel's salvation, the putting away of her sin, the making of the atonement, the world of righteousness, at the fulfillment of God's promises to Israel. I challenge him to show us where anything of Hebrews chapter 9 is not Israel's promises. Here's the argument. All constituent elements of Daniel chapter 9, 24 to 27 would be fulfilled no later than AD 70. Catch the power of this. He agrees with that. But all constituent elements of Daniel chapter 9 are the constituent elements of Hebrews chapter 9, 24 to 28. And 1 Corinthians chapter 15 being the same. Therefore, Hebrews chapter 9 and 1 Corinthians 15 would be fulfilled no later than AD 70. Well, let's look a little closer at what we've already argued. I'm going to keep making the argument until he gives me some kind of an answer to it instead of obfuscation and say, well, I didn't see it, did you? That's an ad hominem that proves absolutely, totally nothing. Hebrews chapter 9, being the same as 1 Corinthians 15, is the completion of the atonement to put away sin in fulfillment of Israel's salvation hope at the coming of the Lord. But Romans chapter 11, 25 to 27, is the putting away of Israel's sin, the time of her salvation at the parousia of Christ. But 70 weeks, ending no later than AD 70, were determined to put away Israel's sin for her salvation. Therefore, the completion of the atonement to put away sin in fulfillment of Israel's salvation hope at Christ's parousia, being the same as 1 Corinthians 15, was no later than AD 70. Now I want you to notice the direct parallel with Daniel chapter 12. Daniel chapter 12 predicted the time of the end, the time of the resurrection out of the dust of the earth to everlasting life when the righteous would shine forth in the kingdom. 1 Corinthians 15 predicted the time of the end. Then comes the end. The time of the resurrection, the giving of immortality, entrance into the everlasting kingdom. And Paul says, brethren, we shall not all sleep. Now watch this. Every constituent element is the same. And he made a little hint about that. Well, you know, there's just similar sounding language. Okay, if his argument is this just sounds similar, show us the difference. I've got to hurry. Watch this. When the power of the holy people has been completely shattered, all of these things. Now, he may want to get up and say some of it. He's got to prove it. Don't just say all doesn't always mean all. Prove it. Don't just claim it. Now, watch. Here's the argument. The harvest at the end of the age, of which Christ was the first fruit, is the resurrection at the end of the age foretold by Daniel chapter 12, verse 2. The resurrection foretold by Daniel chapter 12, verse 2 would be fulfilled when the power of the holy people was completely shattered. Daniel chapter 12, verse 7. Therefore, the harvest at the end of the age, of which Christ was the first fruit, occurred when the power of the holy people was completely shattered. I want Max to tell us, when was the power of the holy people completely shattered? When the resurrection of Daniel chapter 12 verse 2 would be fulfilled. Now watch this. Paul said the resurrection would be when, quote, the law, unquote, that is, quote, the strength of sin would be removed. Verse 56. Now here's a question for us, ladies and gentlemen. What law is or was the strength of sin? My opponent, Mac Deaver, tragically in my estimation, says the gospel is today the strength of sin in response to one of my questions to him. Now I want to ask you a question. Does the gospel deliver from sin or does it strengthen sin? Romans chapter 8. What the law, Torah, could not do, God sent forth His Son in the likeness of sinful flesh to deliver those who are under the law. Do what? Deliver from the law of sin and death. Now watch this. The curse of the law, the curse of Torah, was that it could not give life. There was no forgiveness. There was no righteousness under Torah. Torah was the strength of sin, and it condemned. Torah could not deliver from the law of sin and death, Romans chapter 8. As a matter of fact, Paul called Torah the ministration of death, 2 Corinthians chapter 3. And Paul says, Christ has redeemed us from the curse of the law. And yet my opponent says that the gospel is now the strength of sin. And the gospel does not genuinely give us eternal life. The gospel has not delivered us from the law of sin and death, because if we sin, we still die. The gospel has, as a matter of fact, replaced Torah as the law that condemns. Now I want to ask you what kind of redemption that is. And the question is, I want him to answer this question. Do we today need to be redeemed from the gospel at the end of the Christian age? Now watch. The law, that term in Paul, is used 117 times. When it is used without a modifier, that's 110 times. Invariably, the law of Moses is referred to. There are always modifiers present when the Old Testament, when Torah, is not referent. Paul said, I was alive without the law. The commandment came, sin revived, and I died. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, he calls it the ministration of death, and on and on. Now here's my challenge. I want Mac to show us one text in which Paul ever calls the gospel the strength of sin, the ministration of death, and unable to give us life. Here's my concluding argument. The resurrection of 1 Corinthians 15 would be when the law that was the strength of sin was removed. 1 Corinthians 15, 56. But the law that is the strength of sin, that is ever called the strength of sin, was the Old Testament law, the law of Moses. Therefore, the resurrection would be when the Old Testament law, the law of Moses, was removed. If the resurrection has not happened, the Old Testament is still binding. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I've given another affirmative argument. I've still got a minute and a half by my watch. Okay. The resurrection would be when the strength of sin, that is the law, was removed. 1 Corinthians 15, 55 to 56. But the law that was the strength of sin was the Mosaic Covenant. But Hebrews says the law, the Mosaic Covenant, was nigh unto passing. Hebrews chapter 8, verse 13. Now you watch. If he gets up there and says, oh wait, the law had already passed at the cross, you just wait and see what that means. Therefore, the resurrection was near. Now let's take a look real very quickly. Resurrection would be when sin, the sting of death, was removed in fulfillment of God's promises to Old Covenant Israel. But ladies and gentlemen, Daniel chapter 9, verse 24, 70 weeks ending no later than AD 70 were determined to put away sin in fulfillment of God's promises to Israel. Therefore, the resurrection, the putting away of sin in fulfillment of God's Old Testament promises to Israel occurred in AD 70. If 1 Corinthians 15 is not, ladies and gentlemen, Daniel 9, if it is not Israel's promises, I want him to prove it. My proposition stands affirmed and proven and irrefutable. Thank you.